Calm down, Nibbles. He'll be here soon.
Sorry I'm late. I had to go back in time to give Aleister Crowley the Book of the Law. It's a pain trying to disguise yourself as an etheric being.
You are an etheric being, J-Clone 666. You were fortunate enough that enough J-Clones were created until one with the capacity to carry your existence was manufactured.
It is a nice synthetic flesh container, I must admit.
Help!
You still have him alive? I thought you would have fed him to Nibbles by now.
He still serves a purpose. Outside of everyone thinking he never leaves the Smithsonian for work, I send him out periodically to integrate with society to keep up the illusion he does all of this on his own free will.
Help! 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 Let me out of here!
Shut up now, Jay. You don't want me to send Nibbles over there to keep you company now, do you? Do you have the device?
Yes, I merged it with my biometric mainframe. It will be easy to connect to Justin's house once he and the Kill the Mockingbirds crew start to record their latest episode.
And does Justin think that his latest electronic malfunctions are due to Joe's fallen angel watchers?
Of course. All the while, I am the emissary that they should have been looking out for the whole time.
Save your arrogance for when we win, J-Clone 666. As pathetic as they look, they are more formidable than meets the eye.
I am not worried about these flesh containers in the slightest. Once I have completed the merge today, we will be closer to our goal.
You mean my goal?
Right, your goal.
I have charged enough sporic energy for you to pass into their dimension.
I'm off.
J-Clone 666?
Yes, Mr. Fungus?
Don't screw this up.
That's not in my programming, sir.
Make it so!
Am I tripping? Mysteries of the universe. Organic UFOs. As above, so below.
I'm feeling like a cloud so high, floating around in the sky.
They're all mushrooms.
Come and join me now on this ride.
Mushroom communication system.
Grab a tentacle now, we're gonna fly.
Kaleidoscopes blended with matrix, we're drifting through time. Before the earth was around, thoughts of a sentient mind. Creation's a looting destruction, the higher we climb.
What tarnation?
So high, so high.
Floating mushroom.
What was that? Hey, can you guys check your internet or something real quick? Make sure that everything's working.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't know. I don't know. It looks better on our end now.
Yeah, it looks like everything dropped out.
Yeah, it was like glitching up.
That's weird.
Yeah, it was kind of glitching up. All right, yeah, we'll cut right into it. What's up, guys? This is Joel Thomas and Sean Chris from Kill the Mockingbirds. We've got Justin and J-Clone 666.
Yeah, what a weird number.
Hey, guys, it's...
It's just Jay. It's just Jay here. Don't get caught up in a number. It's just a number.
You had something stuck in your throat there for a second. What was that going on?
Water went down the wrong pipe.
Oh, okay. Okie dokie.
Introducing J-Clone 666. Uh-oh, no. the Christians are tuning out.
I love Iron Maiden.
I bet you do, J-Clone 666, love Iron Maiden. That just sounds like...
There's just something about them that just... It tickles my fancy.
Ah.
Well, since he's 666, he probably also loves Taylor Swift, so.
Now, some things are just even too evil for me.
Yeah, guys. Even too. Welcome back, Floating Mushroom. It's the four of us. We're ready to go with a really fun episode today. We're actually going to be talking about time travel today, and we thought this would be a really fun episode. But before we get to that, we'll have Justin and Jay give us all the socials, everything up front. You know how we do here at Floating Mushroom.
Yeah. Five-star review right now. Right now. Leave a comment. Five-star review right now. Well, that's what they do, so I'm trying to be better about it. Bill just screams at people, and it works. It works. I see it work. Crimson Corn on all social medias. Instagram and Facebook are kind of our two major ones. Jay confirms to me that the Telegram has all kinds of posts and all kinds of stuff.
Telegram is buzzing. So yeah. Jump on over to Telegram. You'll see my last post from last year in May, I think.
It's a year and a half.
You see a poach?
Are you poaching YouTube
posts?
Mm-hmm. You get on our YouTube because lawn chair documentaries are being filmed, are being edited currently as this episode is out. So soon.
What?
Soon.
Soon. What is Simba. That coming out behind that hair flap? It's like horns. What is that?
That was weird. Just hair. It's like that. It's like the.
I slept funky. All right,
Jim Carrey's movie,
Ace Ventura 2.
Yeah,
little nubs. You guys, little nubs growing.
My protuberances.
Protuberances. I should talk. I gotta stop teaching you words.
I knew that one.
Oh, did you?
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much all the socials. We have Patreon. There's all kinds. There's like 100 episodes on Patreon now, or something stupid. And then we do like the Patreon live streams and all kinds of fun stuff, the game nights. We also do in August, if this comes out before August, I think we're aiming to do decalcification of our pineal glands for Patreon night. So woo!
Were y'all using iodine?
Shh. It's okay. Patreon secrets.
No, you want those glands calcified.
I bet you do, J-Clone 666. I bet you want everybody's third eye blocked. Sounds like something you do.
He's like, drink more tap water.
Yes, tap water is good for your body.
Right out the
tap. And you know, you can find us at killthemockingbirds.com on all podcast streaming platforms, but I would suggest go to killthemockingbirds.com. Best place to find the podcast and get the listens in and... Follow us, Kill the Mockingbirds podcast on Instagram, Vantessa Music on Instagram, Sean Chris Music on Instagram, and our Telegram is not very active.
Yeah, all I post on there is the new episodes when they come out, generally speaking, just so people know. And right
can't
now,
post
guys,
everywhere, man.
Just like Justin said, right now, go to Apple Music, go to Spotify, give us a 5-star review, go to Spotify. We do polls every week. You can join in on a cool, fun poll. You can give us comments there. You can give us comments on Apple. Do it. It runs up the algorithm. It puts it deeper in there. So guys like Clone 666 over here can't block us from getting the info to all the people that we're supposed to get it to. So go do it right now. It's super simple. You can give us both a 5-star review right now while you're listening. It's so easy.
Right now.
And Justin
right
said now. That you sound like 99999.
Right now.
Go get to the podcast right now. 5 stars.
Okay, I need that as a sound clip.
Get to the podcast right now. We are asking the big questions.
Oh, gosh. Well, this is the one that gets us taken down. Oh, we had a good run.
So let's just get into it then. Well, obviously.
Oh, the baby is definitely awake now. Just so everybody knows, the baby is definitely awake. No, time travel. How exciting. And I'm going to use this whole episode to screw with Joel, mostly. I mean, that's pretty much all we're doing. At least I'm doing.
I heard that's the whole reason why you decided to join this podcast. You were like, yeah, we'll join up with you so I could just get on your case every second I can.
Exactly. It was a devious trap. Now that we've got people loving this thing, we got to keep doing it.
Yes, devious.
I love how Justin has. I have an infant face. Like, look at his face right now with the coffee. Like, you'll be like, "Oh, you're drinking heavy." You got an infant.
Both moonshine. It's 10 a.m. Got a jar of moonshine and coffee on the table. Need it.
He's Alan, right? What'd you say? He's
he
Alan.
Didn't sleep.
Yeah, Alan from The Hangover. All I imagine sleep. Justin with his baby strapped to his chest, walking around a live event with a beer in both hands, double fisting.
That it will be what happens. I mean, I already have the baby harness. I walk around with him all the time because I kind of do stuff with, like, I'm like, just stay here. And he's obsessed with, like, skin-to-skin contact. Like, that's the only time he's screaming is when he's not physically touching you in some way, shape, or form. So the best way to move around the house is literally just to have him taped to your chest so you can still do stuff.
What would be better if he had, like, one of those old-school helmets with the two beer cans on the side with the straws in his mouth? Then he's got free hands to do anything.
A long time ago, I bought my adopted brother one of those that had a six-pack on the head.
Oh, my God.
It was a whole six-pack. I remember the first time he tried it, he looked down, and all the beer just dumped. Oh, gosh. It's going to be a long episode. I'm tired, boys. But with the ability of time travel, I'll go back and sleep in the past and then come back to the present.
Still be awake.
And still be awake. No, I wanted to do the modern, like, physics and how they, like, time travel is, we can do time travel right now, in a sense, with time dilation. The time dilation is that basically we can all experience time differently depending on where we are in the universe and space and Earth or whatever. But time, so you can travel in the future with this. You cannot travel in the past and you cannot go backwards. So it's kind of a one-way ticket. So everybody at home, it's like, if you go on the International Space Station or you go out into actual space, you know, out of a gravitational pull, you start aging much slower. Time starts passing for you much slower. And you don't feel it. And then on Earth, you know, time to you is going faster and faster and faster. And the closer you get to light speed, the faster time travels around you. So in theoreticals, you know, you could be going light speed and do a couple of loops and the whole universe has aged rapidly around you. So you're actually, from your perspective, traveling forward in time. From everybody else's perspective, is you're just going in big circles in space for a million years. And that's kind of like, that's the very, very simplified version of time dilation and space travel. There you go. Then I have other stuff for you, but that's kind of like that first big thing. And you can go into this, like,
that kind of connects a little bit to what I got. Like, so there's a bunch of, like, obviously you could go on TikTok. There's a million people that claim to be a time traveler. There's people on YouTube. It's a pretty big, I mean, we should have probably done it because there's a lot of people that follow them and maybe they get money for it. So it's a good ploy, but then a lot of them gets caught up. Like, I know there was a bunch of people like commenting like crazy on one of these guys that claimed to be a time traveler. They're like, why don't you warn us about 2020, man? Because it's the videos before that. But one of the most interesting cases is a man by Sergio. I'm going to butcher his name. It's like, yes. Sergio Panama Market Nicaro.
That's how Panama, I would pronounce it.
Whatever. We'll put it in the show notes or something, and you'll be able to pronunciate yourself. But the man from Kyiv, he showed up in Kyiv in 2006, claiming to be from the years in the past. He was claiming to be born in 1932, that he held Soviet documents from the 50s, had photographs on an old camera that of him being 25 years old, and he was older at this time. And he proceeded to show pictures to the police. They went down this whole rabbit hole. He had a girlfriend. There was also a man by the same name in that same region that was missing around that exact same time. So they were looking into it. It's one of the most, and when they saw the pictures, it was all old pictures. So from back in the 50s with that same girl, they tracked down the actual girlfriend, and he's like, she said that he showed pictures. So there's this whole thing of him time traveling. It's one of the most talked about cases that relevancy. And there's also another guy named Adam Akron, or man, look, I don't do the names. All right, guys.
Akon? It's Akon?
Nah, it's like Archcon or so. Yeah, Akon.
He's a time traveler.
You didn't
traveler?
Know Akon was a time traveler?
It makes sense now, but I haven't slept in 4 days, so a lot of stuff makes sense.
He infamously took a lie detector test, and he passed a lot of the stuff. So what I'm saying is there is a little bit of substance to what Justin's saying, because most of the people that have the most realistic stories came from the past. Like, right? There's no, like, or like, they can only go so far, like, one direction, it seems like. But what that gave me this theory was, because when I was going through like all these different time travels, I was looking at the phenomenon ball lightning, right? You know what ball lightning is, Justin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just basically, it almost looks like an orb. It's like, you know, basically a ball of lightning that like can be small, but kind of big. It's a strange phenomenon that when something of the pressures of the storm and like, you know, the moisture in the air, whatever happens, it creates this sphere-like lightning that goes through. And so it got me thinking that this is a phenomenon that has something to do with either, I was at first thinking like aliens, but then I started thinking, what if it has to do with like time travel? Like if that is the vehicle per se that you are traveling in to get to these different points in time. And maybe this phenomenon is like, because with this guy Sergio, he didn't really know, he seemed like he was unaware. What if it just takes you there? Like it's almost like a time traveling portal. That's kind of like what I got out of it.
Hey,
well, thanks for ruining my end, Jay.
Why is Jay's fingers like tapping into the socket over there? What's going on over there?
What are you doing?
What, you guys don't need to know what's going on over here.
I never look at him because he's on the other like, side of the studio.
As soon as Sean started connecting this like sphere-like light into time travel, it was like something electronic went off, and there were literally like some like cords or something that came out of your fingers and went into the socket over there. They're gone now. I saw it, man. Did you see it, Justin?
I didn't. I was looking at you guys.
He's half asleep, though. You got to.
Why am I the one that's always seeing this? Yeah, I feel like the crazy one.
Because you're looking at him. I'm looking at you guys.
Maybe you are the. You ever think that maybe you are the crazy one? I mean, has it ever entered your mind? I mean,
checked out.
Yeah. There's some doctors. I know a lot of medical doctors that would approve this theory of you being the crazy one. And, you know, I've seen medical studies throughout the board, you know, that's just been confirmed and peer reviewed.
Doctor,
have all said that you're probably crazy. I've got some pills if you'd like to take them.
I bet you do.
You're so suicidal.
What? I got a whole arraignment. I mean, I can get you anything you want from Big Pharma.
I bet he's got a literal pharmacy behind that hair flap.
Probably. I know he hands me pills all the time, and I just take them.
Right, I got to keep you in a sedated
you're gonna
state of mind.
A week trying to decalcify your pineal, man, after all the stuff J-Clone 666 been giving you.
I got calcium coming out of my nose, actually. It's weird. I don't understand what's happening. But no, Sean, you burst my bubble. You're right on it. Well, I think you're... So ball lightning is a phenomenon that's never actually been explained, like as in recorded. Tons of witnesses have seen it, including one of the world's leading lightning scientists. I forget the actual terminology for that. But he actually witnessed it as he was jogging through a stadium. He was doing his laps, and it came through like the gates, like a person came through, kind of like hopped through the air, went all the way through the middle of the stadium, and then shot straight up into the sky. And he's like, I would never believe in ball lightning if I didn't see it myself. And he's like, I still can't explain it. And they do that kind of, well, they have a theory, but it's never been fully documented. I do think there are these migrating portals like that that do cause these slips in time, whether it's from a different dimension, like it's a little off kilter from us or whatever, or it's actually our timeline. So for the time's a hard thing for humans to rationalize, especially long term. The best way I found was a toilet paper tube. Everything inside the toilet paper tube is time in our universe. the outside you can't get to normally, and it's like a straight line as far as humans can observe it. But something can pop out of the one end of the toilet paper tube and then go around real quickly and get to somewhere else in the toilet paper tube. I know that's a really hard explanation for everybody at home to kind of get, but it's hard to explain time.
But you can see these balls of lightning now on YouTube and TikTok. You search it up and you see the phenomena, and it's different sizes. Like, it also, you know, it could be some kind of entity thing, but it just time slips. Cause like, and does it have any connection with these particle accelerators? Or I kind of started connecting it with the Montauk Project, you know, like the whole Stranger Things. So is it some kind of experiment that got out of control that, like, you know, they figured out how to like create portals or create time slips or create time travel? But it makes sense to me that you could figure it out, but you can't harness it, right? Like, you know how that happens most of the time with these experiments. They're like, oh yeah, you know, they do get it to go, but it doesn't go exactly the way they want, and they can't harness it because it's something they don't understand. Because it's hard to understand time. The concept of time is very weird because it's kind of made up, right? Like, when we talk about human beings, we've decided that at 24 hours is in a day. So that's why it confuses us when we say time travel. It doesn't necessarily mean the actual time. Like, that's where it slips everybody. And go watch The Flash or something. I don't know what to tell you. Well, then that's what I was saying. Cause The Flash, when he time travels, you know, he runs so fast and he's like a burst of lightning. That's what kind of got me connecting with that whole ball of lightning, where I'm like, man, that time travel, ball of lightning, like, is that it? And even in Back to the Future, they needed lightning to go to the future. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just something with it. And then what about when Ben Franklin, you know, discovered, what's it called? What they say, electricity with the, maybe he didn't discover electricity. Maybe that discovery was a time travel, and that's where we get the dominance of America, right? Because he was in that inner circle. So it's just something that, to me, connects a lot with time travel. And like I said, that Montauk Project, I think that's just another piece to it later on, because that's where it's like we're talking about slipping and dimensional shit.
Hey, check this out. So you were talking about movies, and we always talk about soft disclosure on here. And I see J Clone 666 perked up when I said that. The MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, one of their biggest things that they've been delving into for the past, you know, phase is the multiverse. And one of the groups is called the TVA, and they actually track any kind of variances in all these universes. And it actually operates a lot like your tube, Justin, the way that they talk about time and the way that they move in and out. And if they see some sort of variance, this TVA will show up in that universe in that time period and fix it before it deviates the timeline from where it's supposed to go. It's like they're the time police, and they watch over it. And I wonder, in some ways, if these movies are putting out information about things that they know behind the scenes, because we do know there's parallel universes. We do know that there is a lot more than just our universe. So I think that there is a lot of validity to a lot of these movies that come out. They're just showing us what's kind of already going on behind the scenes. I do agree with you, Sean. I think these balls of light could be time traveling portals. Think about this. In those movies, you have these like portals that come and drop. And think about Terminator. Think about Terminator. When he comes from the future to the past, he comes in a ball of light. It's lightning. It actually opens up and then it disappears and then he's there, or whatever of the Terminators that come from the future come back. So it's the same thing. You see it over and over again in these movies, and I think there's something to it.
So what have I told you? That monsters are using these probably organic time portals that pop up on the Earth from time to time. True behemoths that would be quite frightening to run into. Do you guys want me to tell you a story? Okay. I'm going to take you all the way back to 1903. And this is in Partridge Creek Valley in northern Canada in the Yukon. James Lewis and Tom Lemoore were hunting moose near a clearing, as they spot this little herd of moose. And as they're getting ready to take the shot, a gigantic 25-foot-tall beast runs out, grabs one of the moose in its jaws, and just crushes it. They have never seen anything like this. This beast is tall, two-legged, feathered, big teeth, and it starts dragging this moose. The moose doesn't even touch the ground. It's so large. So it's taking this moose, and they follow this creature because they've never seen anything like it. And as they follow it, they follow the tracks and the blood from the moose. Everything disappears. Doesn't go into a cave. Doesn't go. It's like in the middle of a clearing. So this is the Partridge Creek Beast. It is described as a giant theropod dinosaur. It has been seen from 1853 all the way up to 1999. And it has this common thread of it shows up, it hunts, and then it just disappears in the middle of its trackway. It's had hundreds of witnesses over the last couple centuries. And it loves moose and it loves elk. And that's what people describe it as, is like anything that can carry off an adult moose without it touching the ground is a very large animal. So these early descriptions from the 1850s to the 1903 one were feathered dinosaurs. Very, very similar to like what we understand now. Most theropods were probably fully feathered or at least partially feathered. They were describing this thing well before, right as the dinosaur, as you guys were talking about in your show, or no, not your show, on Joel, you were talking about the Bone Wars and all that. Right. It's right at that apex. So they didn't even know like that dinosaurs maybe had feathers. Like that wasn't a thought in the zeitgeist for that. So they were seeing this animal they could not describe. They had so much trouble. One of the descriptions kind of paints it as a very colorful, large duck mixed with a crocodile. They're like, I don't know how else to describe it. You know, it's like it was feathered and it was big and it was eating elk and moose. And it's still seen to this day. I mean, well, 1999 was the last kind of one. Actually, there was another one in another valley close by in 2012. So this seems to be a reoccurring, if you want to go our kind of time travel angle, to where these portals may be opening up a creature with a highly derived sense of smell, maybe taking advantage of an invisible portal, being like, okay, I can smell easy prey on the other side of this quote unquote door, pop in, grab it, and then walk back through. Because it's not using its eyesight to get back home. It's using its sense of smell. So we think that these are like doors that are opening and closing. Even if we can't see them maybe with the naked eye, it can smell home. It can smell food. It's going in and out. But so that's the Partridge Creek Beast. We did a whole Patreon episode on it because there's a lot. Like there's hundreds and hundreds of sightings. It's even been connected to the Headless Valley up there in the Yukon, which is the valley where everybody's heads go missing for some reason. Just bodies, and then that's where hey, now that's
very
seen.
That's very Nephilim like, man, because a lot of these Nephilim tribes would take heads off as trophies.
Stop it.
So
stop they, it.
Hey, leave they would take alone. Heads off as trophies in these areas. So I wonder if that particular area that you're talking about in the Yukon, there could be some sort of Nephilim tribe maybe underground that's coming up and hunting people in that area.
People don't get that about the Yukon is it's yeah. Literally there's nobody lives there. Like there's nothing like it's there's pristine giant valleys of forest and giant lakes and these massive ecosystems that humans do not live in. I mean, there's a small population of people probably everywhere on the planet. But when we're talking about like these Yukon valleys, there's nobody up there. You know, maybe for every 100,000 square miles, there's probably 15 or 20 people. So if there's something like that, I could definitely see that would be a spot. We talk about living mammoths on the show, and that's one of the spots people claimed is when they actually go into these valleys that people don't go into, they actually get to see mammoths. But these theropods keep popping up. And then there's dinosaurs, the sightings that pop up all over the world, and they just don't seem to have any, like, there's the rhino killer of Africa that is described as a naked theropod, so more like your Jurassic Park T-Rex. You know, no feathers or nothing like that, but it's seen carrying off rhinos and then it just kind of disappears. And then there's the whole pterosaur thing. So pterosaurs are seen everywhere on the planet. So everybody at home, that's the flying reptiles that lived during the dinosaurs. You know, they can be small, like bat size. They can be all the way up to size of 40-foot wingspan, you know, size of a small plane. But they're still seen constantly to this day. So there's a theorist that describes these portals would most likely appear off the ground. They wouldn't be at ground level on most of the planet. So if you're a flying reptile and they're up in the air, you may fly through these on accident and wind up in a completely different area.
That's what's happened at the Bermuda Triangle.
I think so. There could be a lot of that. The Bermuda Triangle has, so the documented magnetic anomalies is crazy. Like, it's the biggest magnetic anomaly on the planet. And that's not what's causing the weirdness, but that's a symptom. So you know there's something else going on because it's the largest magnetic anomaly on the planet. It's like you guys when you went out west with all the magnetic anomalies, you know, that we talked about on that map and stuff like that, that it's weird. It's not the cause, but it's a symptom of something else that's going on. So that's kind of my little shtick, is that dinosaurs are time travelers, but probably not willing. They're probably walking through or flying through these portals, even though pterosaurs aren't dinosaurs.
I'll just add to Justin's hashtag team dinosaurs are real.
Shots fired! Shots fired!
And for the record, I've never said they weren't real. I just have questions about what they really are. And I don't think any of us really know. So I think
Well, we had an episode with AI right now that we just dropped, and we came up with a theory that dinosaurs are just Nephilim and furries, furry Nephilims. You know what I mean? They're just furries, bro.
Oh my gosh. Right. All right, you guys, this is the last floating mushroom ever. I can't physically handle it anymore. You see how much coffee I'm putting in this coffee to even be here?
I wonder what those furry parties are like with the Nephilim and dinosaurs.
Well, we know how big T-Rex's
Close
wing
666
was.
Knows exactly what they are. Okay. He knows what they are, he knows. Won't tell us. That's what I hate about these clones, man. They come here with these smug looks on their faces, and then they'll throw out some disinformation the whole time they're sitting here, and then they sit back with that smug look like, yeah, I'm just going to have them run around chasing their tails.
Yeah, but I think Justin's right, though, because Nessie, you know what I mean? Like, all these things like this, like, I think creatures are just accidentally, it's not like they're willingly going like, hey, let me just, it's just these balls of lightning are just, ball lightning just floats around, man. And they even have one video on TikTok where it's like a little ball and it's floating through someone's house. So that, I was like, if it hits you, I was like, what happens? Nobody knows, right? You're not gonna touch it. You're gonna be like, hey, let me, someone would. But I'm just saying, all the people videotaping it, recording it, are not trying to touch it. Dated myself right there with the videotape it.
So, Sean, there's actually been a video of one of those ball lightnings going through a glass window, and the glass actually became irradiated. And they have that at the somebody's paranormal museum, down on the big one in Florida. They actually have it, and they have a little Geiger counter you can kind of wave. It's not like a dangerous level, but it's where it is irradiated. There is a lot more than background radiation there. It's still at a safe to be around, you know, for a short period of time level. But so there are pouring out radiation, and there's actually a whole show built around that concept with dinosaurs and ancient animals and even future animals with these traveling portals. It's called Primeval, where animals would just, like, there'd be a mosasaur in the middle of a lake in England, like a gigantic marine reptile, and nobody knows how it got there, and it would be there terrorized. Like, it's nothing you don't expect. And then, like, a Giganotosaurus would be like in downtown New York, because it's like, and it's getting worse and worse and worse because humans were interfering with the natural portals, like we were kind of talking about, that these may be a natural phenomena that humans may be actually grabbing and trying to rein in. But the problem with that is the Earth has always won, will always win. And especially with a weirder, more paranormal phenomena, when you start trying to mess with it, you may open doors you can't close.
And it explains some of the extinct species that have, like, magically just reappeared. You know, there are species that were gone for a long time, and they magically, like, oh man, we discovered that we still have one. Like, not that they couldn't be hiding, but I really just love that concept. When I ran into ball lightning, I was like, wow, man, this has to be something that's important to time travel, of some kind of time slip or some kind of traveling of dimensions of some sort.
I think I could actually merge a couple of my ideas too about dinosaurs into what Justin said as well. Like, you've got this, like, ancient Earth, and you've got these dinosaurs that were created by fallen angels. And if there's a deluge coming in that pre-Adamite world, you know, they could have portaled them off, just like the Nephilim got portaled off, and they're in this whole other realm. And then maybe they are coming in and out of these portals, and that's why we're still seeing them. Because, you know, you can see these pterodactyl-like creatures still in, like, Pennsylvania, where they are flying around.
Yeah. They pop up
right
all
it's
over
so
the
crazy
planet.
But doesn't it make sense though that you're seeing more of the flying kind than you are of the kind that would be on the ground? Because the ones on the ground would pop in and out quickly because they would understand that, hey, we're not trying to be seen, whereas the ones in the air are like, well, I don't care if you see me, there's not much you can do in this short span of time. So that's why they're able to do that.
I think that's what I'm thinking is that I mean, birds, think about it, like you just said, like vultures don't care when you see them flying in the air because there's right. not a lot you can do. You know, even a big theropod, these big meat-eating dinosaurs, predators aren't dumb. Predators don't pick fights that they can't win, especially in new areas. So I can definitely see why they would retreat much faster to a familiar area than trying to stick around in the Yukon, especially when it's cold, when they may have been coming from somewhere that may have been a little nicer. You imagine popping in and now you're in the middle of the Yukon in the middle of winter. And after you eat that elk, you're like, well, this sucks. I'm going back home. But no, it's weird. And like Sean said, these species that disappear, the coelacanth is the famous one. It's, you know, the most famous one out of all this, but it's not the only one by any long shot. But they disappeared for, I believe it was 175 million years from the fossil record. Now, I know I don't agree with the timescale fully. But as far as modern paleontology classifies it, it's like 175 million years or something like that. And then they popped up in 1912, and we found a couple of them. And then we found three untouched colonies of them all around the planet out of nowhere. Here's the thing with what Sean's saying, though, why it really speaks is they were near popular fishing grounds. They were near historic fishing grounds. So for them to randomly start popping back up again, scientists kind of today put it as a population boom. They may have been like, let's say for the last 30 years, they were in a downslope, and then that year they were in an upslope or whatever. So now they were coming into new areas where the nets could get them. Or like you're saying, that coelacanths are really good at finding these little holes, these little portals, and being like, well, let's go travel around time. And it's probably like horseshoe crabs. They've been around for 350 million years. They're one of the few things that are older than, well, they're right at the, almost the same age as jellyfish, and they're just a little younger than mushrooms. So it's crazy to think about that those animals have survived, and they've disappeared from the fossil record and popped back up and disappeared and popped back up and disappeared and popped back up. But yeah, so there's all these, Nick, that's 100% right. There's all these animals that just kind of avoid. So when we start seeing dodos, you know that they found a portal.
But is that from them finding the portals and going through them, or is that somebody... humans possibly going through portals and manipulating the timeline, and then these animals that are back are a byproduct of that manipulation?
There's a guy 350 million years ago picking up horseshoe crabs and throwing them through a portal?
No, but he could have stepped on something, and then that changed the whole timeline for their future, and now they're just back and they didn't go extinct, you know, just created some conditions where they lived.
Time travels too.
Let me ask you this. You were talking about in and out of portals. What do you think about Tasmanian tigers doing something like that?
I don't think they ever went extinct. I think they're, yeah, well, keep in mind they had a bounty on them for 50 years, and it was like, let's say, like $15. So to a poor Australian farmer, it was a good chunk of money. And they are seen on mainland Australia still. So cool thing about Australia, and it has the largest undocumented rainforest on the planet. That's where we think Megalania, the giant Komodo dragon, still lives, because you can't go there because literally the plants will kill you. The insects will kill you. You can't, and you're so far away from any kind of medical center. But for the Tasmanian tiger, it was a species that was brought to the brink of extinction due to hunting by humans. They were already a shy animal. So you have this thing that's called like general, or it's genetic, like, I'm forgetting the word. Oh gosh, a genetic disposition to avoid humans at all cost. You know, it's breeding these animals that are more hidden, more secretive. But we're still getting pictures of them. We never stopped getting pictures of them. It's not like the last, I think they were declared fully extinct in like 1978 or something like that. And then there was a picture of one like 4 years after that. And they're like, oh, this is the last one. And then there was pictures of them in the 90s. And they're like, maybe there's still one left. And then it's like, people don't think that they're still breeding. And that always... that was crazy to me, just because you don't see them. I mean, we have all kinds of animals we don't see that we know they're there. I mean, I dealt with endangered species for a living, and they're there. You just don't find them. I mean, if you're smart, you know, but I just think they never went extinct. You know, when you're talking about the animals that may have gone extinct due to mass extinction events, that's a little different rather than selective hunting. Like
animals are smarter than we like give them credit for as well. Like, I think we talked about the other day with AI. Like, we were just saying, like, it's true. Like, humans saying, oh, well, they don't talk, so they can't communicate. And there's so many intelligent animals that communicate very well and that have lived a lot longer than than humans on this earth. You know what I mean? So they kind of run the place. And because they communicate differently doesn't mean they don't have their own sense of intelligence. It's the same as those people that go to, you know, collegiate awards and they're like, oh, you know, I have a master's and so I know everything. But there's so many different ways of expressing intelligence, especially with elephants, primates obviously, and there's probably other ones that are strategically staying away from us, like you said. If they're smart enough to know, like, hey, if we go over here, even deer know, like, hey, enough to sense, there's a lot of hunters over here. Is there dumb deers too? Of course, just like there's smart people and dumb people.
So for that, like turkeys here in the U.S., they disappear the day before turkey season starts. That's that genetic knowledge or even learned knowledge. Like, okay, you know, they'll be strutting for like hunters practicing the day before. And then when it's that Friday, everything disappears. And it's like, oh, turkeys are dumb. How do they know that, you know, it's just coincidence? No, they remember that every year at this time, they start getting shot at. So now it's time to stop making all this noise and just kind of sit for a couple weeks and let the season, because it's like they'll start coming back out right when season's over. And it's not because the people are there, because people are there before and after, you know, it's just, yeah, people don't give animals enough credit. I mean, the only reason the humpback whales haven't took over the planet is they don't have hands. And the only reason octopus don't take over the planet is because they don't live long enough.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's like a little cap that was put in on them for that purpose. It's like, yeah, you guys are really cool. Like, yeah. God's sitting there creating. He's like, but, you know, I know what's going to happen if I give you the full length of time. I was thinking about this too, Justin, how you said that these mass level extinction events. And I've been thinking a lot about that lately and how that I don't know if there's ever been a mass level extinction event. I think the events existed, but I think some of these things got out in portals or went underground in these massive caverns like you talk about, or even Hollow Earth, or however you want to view it. I think that's why you keep seeing these creatures keep reappearing through time. And then they're said to be different things depending on the time period or whatever the people of that time period would say that they were. Whereas I think maybe these dinosaurs were dragons. And I agree with you too, Justin, because you've said that you think that dragons could be different. And I think there could be a correlation there. But I think throughout time, they've just been called different things. And I think they go into hiding. And I do think this whole like portaling system, this time travel that exists in those spaces is how a lot of these creatures will get away and go to another place and then repopulate. Or maybe they started in that other place and then migrated here in different time periods too. And I also think when you've got these cataclysms or whatever else, it also creates deeper rifts to where these things can come in and out more easily, I think, in different times too. You know, if you're going to talk about the Sumerians and every 3,600 years, they say there's like a cataclysm or whatever, or Nibiru comes by here. You know, I think that when these type of events happen, that this is where you see a lot of these mergings of different universes and different time spaces. And that's why you're seeing, you know, maybe in these deep places, like you said, in Australia, where, you know, you can't go into this undocumented rainforest. I mean, there could be a lot of rifts going on there. It could be portals that just don't close in places like that because of that reason. Nobody's back there. So it's like, hey, we just move in and out.
I'm all for it. Like, and then I do think like cataclysms can trigger these natural, like the natural versions of the phenomena, whether it's like the portals opening or maybe even like, I don't know, like we talked about the Terminator, like almost like these little bombs, these little explosions that you kind of grab everything around him, like a little implosion, pull it in and move it somewhere else. I mean, if you look at the Great Dying, which is the one of the seven mass extinctions, but is the biggest mass extinction ever documented. We don't know what caused it. The other ones kind of have some signs, you know, like burning in the atmosphere or whatever. The Great Dying was like 99.8% of all life on the surface died. Like only a couple vertebrates were left. It's crazy. And then, you know, obviously species bounce back, or what we're saying here with this time travel, that you know, the Noah's Ark version of these little bubbles popped up and saved some animals. But we don't know what caused those, you know, but that's a lot of energy. Whatever that was that caused everything pretty much to die on the surface of the planet. That's a lot of energy being expelled in some way, shape, or form. So who's to say that that doesn't cause a whole bunch of these little bubbles to pop up and just grab everything? And it may be even, we talk about the Earth being kind of an organism in its own right. It may be a natural defense mechanism of the Earth to make sure it sustains life in some capacity if it, like a meteor hits, like we said, like we think with maybe the dinosaurs. I don't know if I buy that, but it is, you know, whatever the theory is. But these mass extinction events, it may be the Earth's natural way of being like, okay, I got to grab a handful of species to get through this. You know, I got to save something. It's interesting stuff.
Well, think about these balls of lightning or what we're talking about, and your talk said bubble. When a bubble pops, it doesn't necessarily have to just take one thing. When it pops, maybe all that like goes everywhere. Oh. Anything that touches takes it, you know what I mean? Any beings, it could take you to where it's trying to take you. It doesn't necessarily just have to be like you're in that bubble floating away. Maybe once you hit it, it explodes like a bubble. And when if you pop a bubble, you know that everything goes everywhere, and whatever it touches brings it to whatever timeline it's supposed to.
100%.
Hmm.
All right, that was my little shtick.
So we're on the same page.
So I'm going to get into some people that have talked about time travel, who I think could be connected to time travel. We're going to break into a little bit of weird here. But I think there's some validity to some of it. And some of it originally, you would have asked me a year and a half ago, about one particular subject we'll get into, I wouldn't have gave a lot of validity, you know, because of who the person is and why I think that the agenda was pushed about this person being a time traveler. But the more that I look at him, nah, he's a clone like one of the Jays.
Sorry.
But he's like one of those really like faulty versions. Oh. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's I almost a lot of feel like that
the Biden clones are what the Jay clones work on just for practice. Like, get the cheap model.
There goes the podcast.
But, yeah, we'll get into this, but I did want to talk about the first time that time travel was actually mentioned in history, and you have to go way back to get into this, but it's in the Vishnu Purana, which is ancient Hindu text of ancient and medieval text, and a lot of scholars disagree about when these texts were actually written, but most people gauge around 300, 400 BC, and it's basically it talks about Revata. He was the eldest son of a prince, and he went to consult the god Brahma about a suitable husband for his daughter. And he was watching all these singing performances. It was like a big party when he went to talk to Brahma. And he's like, oh, man, this was a great night. And then when he finally talks to Brahma, and Brahma's telling him that the third and fourth generation no longer survives, he's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you're going back to Earth. Like, time's passed. You've lost tons of time. We're in like the fourth generation now. So he's basically saying like, your daughter's not alive anymore. Like, there's no me hooking her up with the best man. Like, while you've been gone, all this time has passed. So this was actually the first like written documentation that we know about, obviously. Like, I always say that history has been, you know, cultivated for us to take a certain way. But as far as ancient texts that we know about, that was actually the first time that it was ever talked about. And I just find like the Indian and Hindu stuff fascinating, because they've got so much like old earth knowledge and time travel and things like Vimanas and all these different mechanisms. I mean, even talk about mechanical humans in these texts like the Mahabharata, where they actually talk about these almost like clones, where they create these mechanized or AI back then. So I just feel like, man, something's going on with like Indian and Hindu ancients. Like, they knew so much about ancient technology, and they bleed it in with a lot of their gods and everything else. And I think that could totally be true too. I think that these guides probably existed and they were able to see a lot of these things, but I think time travel was part of that. And I thought that was just a really cool thing that I was digging around and finding, because I've just been doing a lot of research on ancient Hinduism and a lot of these texts, like the Ramayana and a lot of this stuff. And it's so much technology based in there. It's not just like this mythological thing that we all think that it is. And I thought that was really cool when I ran across that.
About Barbarique having like an arc reactor for a like a heart, and it being like almost AI controlled. They'd ask him to do a command and he could do it. Didn't matter what it was.
Greatest
warrior of all time.
So why, I guess, there's a lot of this stuff with India and that kind of stuff. Why that place in the world? Is there something special about it?
Well, it's the
Middle
East. So I feel like that when you get in that particular realm, you're also dealing where the Hebrews came out and where like first man probably started. And I think that's where you're going to get a lot of, in my opinion, it's just my opinion. I don't know for a fact. I just think that we know that the ancient man, first man kind of came from that area as far as we know, right? That's just what we know. So I think that maybe that's where things originated, where maybe even the Garden of Eden, like I think it was, you know, in a different realm, but I think that's maybe where that rift was there, where people could pass in between our world, that world, maybe even like the dimensional heaven was in that area too originally. So I think that's just kind of where you're getting, you're going to get more from that area. I mean, you look at Sumerian culture, you look at Babylonian culture, all that comes from that area, right? And I'm not saying that the Americas don't have a deep, rich past too. I think that it's been hidden more than this ancient past in Middle East from us. I think because we're so narrative driven in the Americas, and I say Americas, I don't think just the US, but just the Americas through Canada, that we're so narrative driven here about what actually happened, because the Smithsonian, and I see you smiling over there, J Clone 666, but the Smithsonian was integral in creating this narrative that the Native Americans were the first people here in the Americas. And that's just not true. Like when you start digging into the Moors and a lot of these other theories, I don't think that they were. I think that were they here a long time? Absolutely. But I don't know if they were the first people. And I also think that when you're looking at the Middle East and like Egyptian culture, it was over here long before people want to admit. And I think a lot of that stuff's been covered up. So that's, to answer your question in a long way, Justin, I think that's why that you see a lot of these cultures like Indian culture and Sumerian culture, Babylonian culture, Hebrew culture that are talking about a lot of this ancient technology. I just think that's kind of where it originated. I'm not saying that it didn't exist in other parts of the world. Absolutely, it did.
Okay. I know that's not my strong suit, but I've always heard people like talk about that part of the world in this kind of, you know, but never explain like that. You know, I just never knew.
That makes sense. I'm too tired to argue. So you win.
You know, my goal, but eventually, I really want to travel over to the Middle East and go to some of these places. I mean, that's been one of my lifelong goals, is to really, you know, go to Jerusalem, go to some of these places that I'm able to get access to and see some of these things and enjoy that part of the culture. Cause I just think it's so rich with stuff that we're just not privy to over here in the States. And I do feel like here in the States a lot, and there's brainwashing all across the world, but I do feel like that our our history in the past has been really covered up here in the States, and we don't really know what's happened here a lot, man. And I just think it just seems like it's very narrative driven here, more so than some other places a lot of times.
Well, I think it's not that it's more narrative driven here. I think it's because we were the blueprint of changing this, like, hey, let's erase all this history. You know, like if you look in the Western world in general, not even just the States, in the Western world in general, that's the blueprint to kind of like, we don't need to talk about this stuff anymore. Like, kind of like get it out of history.
I like it.
Get rid of it all.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Because, like, they talk about mound building culture here in the US. They never say who it was.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever listen, it's like they don't ever talk about it being one of the Native American groups. They just talk about being mound building culture. Well, who were the mound builders? Well, we don't
know. Nephilim, baby. That's what they were.
Like, I do. Like, that's. I'm not even arguing with you on that. I'm right there with you on that. That it's the Nephilim, the giants, whether it's Nephilim giants or another form of giant or whatever, you know, it doesn't, I do think it was something along those lines, because some of the monolithic structures that are on the mounds. So Ohio had 8,000 to 10,000 destroyed in a 3-year period that we never got to see. But some of them were truly massive. If you look at this one's Wisconsin, but the Dragonback one, people didn't know what it was. There was houses built on it. It was so big that they thought it was a hill. And they built houses on it. And then somebody from the air is like, that really looks like a giant dragon. And then they started working on it. And it was built to look like that. And people didn't know because there was, a forest grown on it and whatever. But that's really off topic.
I don't even know if these were mounds to begin with or if they were something else. And whenever the flood happened, buried everything.
There's a dragon down there?
I mean, maybe not a dragon, but it could have been a building built as a
dragon. I'm just picking on
and
you.
And then it's flooded and buried over time. And then what we're left with is the mound. All it just covered, and you start digging into it. You don't know what you're really going to find, because maybe it was built that way intentionally, but maybe kind of Mother Nature over time left it that way.
That and the glaciers, nobody talks about that, is that a lot of those mounds are built at, during, and right after the glaciers. So if you have a whole culture, that may have just been the biggest thing that was left that survived.
Right.
Exactly. Everything else was rubbed flat. We're talking about this, some of these glaciers were a mile high. Okay. Yeah. So, like Serpent's Mound is famous because it's literally right where the glacier stopped. But what was, 100 years before the glacier got there? What was, 3 miles into the glacier that got crushed? There's all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, glaciers are pretty good at wiping away most of history under a giant grindstone.
Right.
Way off topic. Sorry, guys. That's what happens when my brain starts deflating.
Good. So I'm going to move to a guy who everyone talks about when it comes to time travel, H.G. Wells. So I really want to talk about, he was the first one that coined the term time travel, and everybody kind of ran with it. What a lot of people don't know about H.G. Wells is that H.G. Wells was very connected to what we would consider the Illuminati or Freemasonry. So he talks about this a lot in his books. His future predictions, which a lot of them came true in his fictionalized books, which I find fascinating. And then he's got a whole book about time travel on top of it. So it's almost like, we could say that he was privy to the knowledge behind the scenes with these Freemasonic groups and what they wanted to push the agenda. And I can totally get down with that. But we're getting weird today. So I wanted to maybe delve into the possibility that he, at the very least, understood time travel, and that maybe that there were people going future to the past that were giving these people information about how that they could operate to subjugate us. He wrote The World Set Free. He predicted the atom bombs and the effect of nuclear war. This was the 1913. He also talked about the NWO would come about by the elite controlling the air and sea lanes, as well as energy production, which they've already done that too. He predicts modern warfare, the bombing of London, atom bombs, the League of Nations he brings up, stealth fighters over Iraq, space flight, just so many things that were futuristic for that time period. I mean, he's known as the guy that first created science fiction. That's really where the term science fiction came from, was from H.G. Wells. So we always talk about in any kind of entertainment or media, because books were media back then. We didn't have TV. They didn't have radio like that. It was all books. And it was, what that they could get out in something someone could read. So the fictionalized stuff was done in book form. And he was the one to really push like this fictional form of science fiction. And there were a lot of concepts that he puts out that end up being very true. And we were talking about the League of Nations. He was a major player that helped create the League of Nations. He also really pushed the Russian Revolution. He was big with FDR and the U.S. and Stalin with the whole Moscow thing. He was actually a big Stalin fan on top of that. He did a book called Open Conspiracy. That was the name of the book. And he talks about bringing the NWO, and he was advocating for those things, this technocratic future. That's what a lot of these guys do that people don't understand. The Wells and Huxleys and these guys, they were all part of these secret societies. They were all a part of these things that that created what we now know as our future now, which is really crazy. When you talk about, you know, H.G. Wells, you know, he was a part of what they called the plan. You know, he pushed books like Anticipation and Things to Come, where, again, he was talking about New World Order as if it was already self-evident, like it was already there. One of the really craziest things that he actually talks about, there was a book that he wrote called The Inexperienced Ghost. It was like more of a short story. And in there, he talks about a guy named Sanderson, who is a Freemason, and he's a member of the Lodge of the Four Kings. And basically in that, he talks about the esoteric branches of Masonry and how it needs to be integrated into society. So he pushed this esoteric occultic knowledge in conjunction with technocracy and time travel. So all this stuff is melded in together and is pushed as fiction to everybody that reads it. But really, he's just laying the blueprint. He was a part of the blueprint, the original blueprint of what we consider the New World Order today. He pushed that. Now, again, on a basic level, yeah, he could have just been a part of these secret societies that he knew what they were pushing this agenda. And he's like, this is what we want to do in the future. But he just seemed to have just this uncanny knowledge of technology that wasn't even out yet. Now, maybe they had the technology behind the scenes already, but where'd they get it? Maybe it was time travel. Maybe they are sending people to the future and then bringing them back to the past. And then he already knew he was a part of this. I don't know. It's just something to think about. It's really weird when you started digging into H.G. Wells.
I was just going to say H.G. Wells is just one of many people, you know, we put into the public, you know, domain so everyone can consume their thoughts and their material, just to, you know, kind of prime your mind for what we want to come in the future. We, as in, you know, collective humanity, of course. The good of all humanity. You need these people in place to help control the timeline, to set it up for what's supposed to happen.
It's called pulling a Biff. You know what I mean? You gotta be Biff for Back to the Future. You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah. You need that. We have the almanac in our back pocket. The sports almanac. Yes. Don't worry. If you know, you know. Soft disclosure.
Clone 666 speech right there was pretty creepy. Justin, you look a little scared sitting there.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, that to me, I think H.G. Wells, just in my opinion, after digging through it, and the best part about it is when you dig into him being a Freemason, there's a lot of evidence out there, but there's no actual like pinpoint proof. And they say that that's for sure why he was in these secret societies, because a lot of these guys that are very deep in these secret societies, they wanted to push his not being a part of those secret societies. There's even no evidence of him actually being involved with anything occultic, outside of the fact that he wrote about it all the time. So like he never was in like any of these groups doing it. Like Aleister Crowley, we all knew about it. He promoted it. We knew that he did it, but H.G. Wells didn't. But he talked about esoteric knowledge and all these hidden knowledges and all these things in his books. So, but then he disguised it as fiction. And he was friends with these guys like Orson and Aldous Huxley. He was friends. They all rolled in the same circles. So I feel like that these fictionalized books were put out as blueprints of what they were going to do to us, and maybe they had some sort of knowledge through time travel, maybe even moving in and out dimensionally and understanding different spaces, because they just had a different, just a different knowledge when they're writing this science fiction that is now a lot of it truth. It's factual things that are actually been created that we use in our daily lives.
Well, it's nudging the public to go for that. Because when you put it in the ether like that, like sometimes someone will create something or it'll inspire them. Like you said, it's a blueprint, not just for like, hey, we're going to try to do this. But sometimes it makes it easier for people to like fall in line because they're nudging them. They're like, oh, man, where did I hear this before? You don't realize if you read it or watched it or heard it. That is where it gets into the subconscious and you either obey or you could even participate, right? Like, cause you might be interested in certain technologies and that might push you and that helps them because they can't do it all by themselves. They need people to believe in this stuff or it can't exist.
Mm-hmm. I think too, belief is key. Like if the mind doesn't believe it and then the collective, you know, the majority of people don't believe it, it will, you know, never take to fruition. It won't happen. It's all collective thought that majority needs to believe it. So it's a lot easier to accept and manipulate people when a mass of them already believe these things that are being said or told. It's in their consciousness. Yes. Bugs are good. They're higher in protein. You know, they take up less space. It's good for you. Like stop eating, you know, red meats and chicken, and that's a waste of time and energy and polluting the air. It's bad for the planet. Bugs.
Hey, that's just that bugs. Clones malfunction. You might want to give a little hit on the, might want to do the old, slam the TV in the side of the TV. It's fix it, tune it in.
So I'm going to move to this other guy and then we'll move to the last little centerpiece that I think is one of the most interesting things. So John Titor was one of the guys that was brought up who in 2000, 2001 came out on these post-to-post forums, Art Bell's post-to-post forums, as a time traveler from 2036. Now, he made a lot of like numerous and vague predictions regarding calamities that were coming. Now, a lot of these calamities didn't take place, right? They didn't according to how he said that they would. Now, the biggest question, though, with John Titor was when he was did a little stop by here, because that was what he said that he did. He said he did a little stop by because he went back in time to 1975 to retrieve an IBM 5100 computer. And he said it was needed to debug various legacy computer programs in 2036. And apparently his grandfather worked on that specific model back then. So that's how he had a connection when he was able to go back and he was able to get one of those devices and bring it back to 2036. Now, he did say that his stopover in 2000 when he popped up was for personal reasons and he was going to collect pictures that he lost during the Civil War that was coming. The really cool thing about this whole thing, and listen, there's a lot of holes in it, especially with what he was predicting was going to happen because we're way past a lot of stuff he was predicting. But he did break down what was in his time traveling device. He said it was two magnetic housing units for dual micro singularities, an electron injection manifold to alter mass and gravity of micro singularities, a cooling and X-ray venting system, gravity sensors, a variable gravity lock, four main cesium clocks, three main computer units, and it was all installed in the rear of a 1966 Chevrolet Corvette convertible. Very back to the futuristic with some sort of sports car. It was later that he moved it into a 1987 truck with a four-wheel drive. So I don't know what happened when he made that layover in 2000 that he needed to switch it over to that. Now, his predictions, he had an upcoming civil war in the United States. It was going to do with order and rights. He said it started in 2005 after civil unrest surrounding the presidential election of that year. He said the civil conflict was characterized as having a Waco type event every month that steadily gets worse. And it was going to erupt by 2008. Now, there was a big financial crisis in 2008. He goes on and on about how there's different things that escalate all the way up until, like, I want to say 2020, something like that, 2019, 2020. Again, a lot of these things didn't happen or come true. Now, the thought pattern, though, is that when he came back, that he alleviated some of those things from happening. That was kind of the point, that instead of them happening, what he did actually worked, that he was able to connect with people during that time, and it stopped those events from happening, and it pushed him all the way out. So he actually did achieve what he came back in time to achieve, and that's why these things didn't happen. So in actuality, if you look at it from that angle, maybe he was real, and maybe he did stop this stuff from happening.
Now, with Titter, I do remember, I've looked into him before, because I would laugh at the last name every time. One of his predictions he got right was a tornado hit a certain trailer park on a certain day, and I always laugh because I'm like, well, that's a pretty safe bet because it was in Oklahoma, and he's like, a tornado will hit somewhere in Tornado Alley on this day, and it hit a trailer park. It's like, that's their natural enemy. Like, of course, it's like, yeah, great white shark's gonna eat a seal today.
You never heard there's no such thing as tornadoes?
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I didn't.
Chuck Norris just hates trailer parks.
Justin's over there like,
Chuck Norris, poor.
No tornadoes, huh? All right. This clone's getting a little out of control for me.
Tornadoes aren't real, guys. Sorry to break it to you.
No, but I really do believe that. I mean, they talk about the butterfly effect, right? That's a, once you go there, like, that automatically could alter it anyways. Like, I've always said that just in general with your energy. Like, if I don't go to a party and something happens, I guarantee you if I went there, that wouldn't have happened because there would have been a different energy that was there that would have been pumping through that building. And I think it's the same thing, not just your energy, but, like, who knows? Like, not even just connecting with people, by passing by people, man. Like, it could be somebody that was going to be, you know, the next Hitler or a mass shooter, and you walk by them and acknowledge them, and they're like, wow, that's the first time. Those little things can, I truly believe, could alter history tremendously. Just like I always tell people when they listen to the podcast, it's like, it's not about you necessarily. It's who are you inspiring, right? Like, you can inspire the next great leader or next great thinkers and critical minded people, instead of just hoping that it's just me. And like, that's the whole process of this, right? It's more subconscious. It's not like our main focus, but that's the focus, is like, hey, we could connect to more people, and then they could be the people that take this the next step further.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Sean. I like that a lot. And I think the butterfly effect could come into play. And maybe Titter was real. Maybe the whole Titter thing was real. And his whole effect was this butterfly effect to stop this stuff from happening. I'm putting it out in the ether. People are already thinking about it. Even if it's a small group of people, it doesn't matter. It could be one person. You just changed the effect of what's going to happen from this timeline. You know, I'm sure the TVA was like hunting him down during this time and like trying to take him back. He already put it out there. He already put it out in the ether. Again, there were some things that came out that made me think that maybe it was true, because one of the things that came out right after was that it was a big hoax. And they actually said who the hoaxer was. It was supposedly John Rick Barber. And he was a computer scientist, and in conjunction with his brother, Larry Haber, and he was a Florida entertainment lawyer. And apparently they created this in 2009. But I found that interesting because this comes out in 2009, right after the 2008 crash, and Titter is now labeled as a big fraud. And I always seen when the mainstream is pushing something as a fraud, it starts making me think like, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not a fraud at all. Maybe they're just pulling these names out of a hat and they're saying, these are the guys that created this, when actually Titter was real all along. And maybe he did achieve his ultimate goal. He got the computer that he needed to get to take back the future. By the time he got back the future was vastly different from when he left it, because that was his whole goal of coming back, was changing it.
Well, a lot of the theories too of like that quantum travel, the quantum computer with the Tyler AI, you know, like that Tyler AI was a huge thing in the community for a while where people were talking about that this was an AI from the future, and they were talking about time travel is more AI and the human consciousness. And then it's like, then it goes to like the human consciousness passing through other vessels or meat sacks, like you like to call them. You know what I mean? We don't know how that goes either. Like, are these time travelers fallen angels or different
time traveling ghost
entities spiritually, like their soul or their consciousness goes into these meats? Because all we're seeing is just like you know, our bodies and our flesh. That doesn't mean what's actually traveling. They could be traveling through these ethers, which could be this AI technology or some sort. That's just something that I kind of like. I heard people saying that, and then like, you know, there was some good kind of connection sometimes, but then, you know, then they got really into the whole Q thing, you know, like the, it kind of got me a little off topic.
Interesting theory. So we're talking about parallel universes and what that could mean. So, you know, I've talked to Tony several times about Psalm 82:1, where it says Elohim judge the Elohim, and they basically weren't doing their jobs. What if these Elohim like run universes, and you've got like Yahweh who runs it all, who created it all, but you've got these Elohims, and maybe some of them are like screwing up these universes. And maybe that's why he got pissed off, because you've got, think about it. If he's got certain, you know, hierarchy of people doing their jobs, and you got this divine council, but you've got multiple universes and parallel universes, what if that's like some of these guys ain't doing their jobs right? Like, hey, man, screw up all universe. Like, you know what I mean? And like, hey, there's checks and balances all the way to the top. So I just thought that was an interesting thought too, man, that really just hit me, because we've always wondered what those Elohim's jobs were. Because you got fallen angels, you got angels who directly have contact with human beings and are all, you know, integrated into our world in a different way. But what if these like Elohim, these other gods are like, hey, your job is just to maintain this universe. And then they're just like screwing it up.
I love it. You change it, that they're middle management. Yeah. The translation is they're middle management.
You're wrong, man. I don't know. It just kind of hit me there, because I've always, that's been that thought, like, what were they doing? And it just kind of struck me right now that, hey, maybe this is what they're doing. And maybe some of them are allowing time travel that shouldn't be happening to. And he's like, hey, man, what are you doing? Like, it's time for me to step in. Like you said, CEO's got to come down. You like, check the store out. Hey, man, you're right. Hey, this stuff on the shelf isn't right, man. You need to have somebody running this right here. Like, yeah, it's just a thought. But yeah, to the last guy, and this has been the most interesting one to me. And again, initially, I wouldn't have gave a lot of credence only because of how it came out and who it came out from. But I always reserve the right to change my mind as I do research. And one of the things that I do know is a lot of times when something's being pushed, there is some truth to it. There's got to be some layer of truth to it that makes it a valid story. And it's Donald Trump being a time traveler. And I don't know if you guys
are fake news.
Donald Trump's time traveler?
So this was a big piece of the QAnon movement when it came out around 2016. But there are some wild stories that kind of add up. And it's really weird. And it's going to start with Ingersoll Lockwood. He was an American author and lawyer. He published two children's books and one short pamphlet in 1890 and through 1896. So he published the first book, The Travels and Adventures of Little Baron Trump and His Wonderful Dog Bulger, which then followed up with 1893 with Baron Trump's Marvelous Underground Journey. The last quote unquote book, which is that pamphlet, was called The Last President. And all these can be found online. You guys can go check them out. It's very interesting. Even some of the pictures.
You said 1890s? Yes.
1890s. So from 1890 to 1896, these three pieces of art were put out. So it follows, the first two books follow a young boy named Wilhelm Heinrich Sebastian von Trump, and they call him Little Baron Trump. And he comes from a very wealthy family that lives on Fifth Avenue in New York City, and it's called Trump Castle. And that is in this book. So if you know anything about the actual Donald Trump, He lives on Fifth Avenue and a place called Trump Tower. So little Baron and his dog Bulger, they go on a bunch of wild adventures and they travel through dimensions in time with the help of a mystical character called Don Fum. And Fum helps them find the portal to his world within a world, and no lying, leads them to Russia. And again, this is the late 1800s. We're talking 1890 to 1896 when this comes out. The final novel or pamphlet was called The Last President. And it starts with a scene in New York City. It's in chaos. Police officers in the streets are trying to calm down the rioters. Mobs are organizing and a bunch of anarchists and socialists, and they threaten to plunder the houses of the rich who have wronged them for many years. And this is at Fifth Avenue Hotel. And if you know anything about the Fifth Avenue Hotel, is where Trump Tower stands. And these anarchists and socialists are pushing against this tower in the book. So that in itself is really weird, because you've got a character called Trump. And if you look at the pictures in the book, which I have, and you look at pictures of Trump as a kid, the drawings look even similar, where it's like, man, that's kind of strange. And maybe that's a reach, but the way I was looking at it is like, man, they do look very similar. So just the fact that we're talking Fifth Avenue, the fact that we're talking about Little Baron Trump. Now, one of the things that people were wondering about was the dog situation, because Trump never had dogs. He didn't want anything to do with dogs. And that was something that people talked about. But when he became president, they got a golden doodle named Patton. And that was his first dog. And he was in love with this dog. Like, apparently Trump loved this dog to death. Well, people are like, well, his name's not Bulge or Bulger. But here's the crazy thing. So the dog's name's Patton. George Patton is an American military captain who was an instrumental factor in the U.S. victory at the Battle of the Bulge during World War II. So you can even connect the Bulge to Bulger, even in that aspect. So people are wondering, okay, this is kind of weird, but how could Trump be a time traveler? This gets weirder. John Trump was the uncle of Donald Trump, who was an engineer, and he worked for MIT at the time of Nikola Tesla's death. Now, these are facts you can look up. When Tesla died, the federal government confiscated all of Tesla's work, and they hired a group of scientists and engineers to help them decipher the notes. Trump was one of them chosen for the task. In doing this, John Trump got access to all of Tesla's work, actually confiscated all of his work himself. All of it disappeared. And he said that he found the methodologies of time travel in Tesla's work, but he didn't have the means to make it happen. So he passes this time traveling information, all of Tesla's work, to Donald Trump. He gives it to his nephew. And he's hoping that when Trump's old enough, that he will have the access to the technology to be able to time travel.
Quiet.
So in this, that's how Trump got access, according to this story, got access to time traveling machinations from Tesla himself.
And this is absolutely true about the whole That's Tesla thing. Like, I went down that whole rabbit hole a while ago, and it is like, that is a huge connection. And Patton is like one of the most famous generals, and of the Battle of the Bulge, is like anybody that's really heavy in the military knows about that. The connections are definitely there, but I think it's like, where like the other people got it wrong, like where they're saying like, oh, this is the savior.
Right.
I almost think it's like a different thing. This is how they figured out how to like integrate even further into the working class psyche of being able to like dominate, right? Where these bloodlines can further dominate by manipulation. That's what I think. I think it was just a better tool to help manipulate.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Mm-hmm.
This is crazy.
It's almost like like they're giving you breadcrumbs and you you just eat it up and it all adds up. So it must be true.
What was the name of the author that did the little pamphlets?
Well, he did in the 1890s? Books and a pamphlet. Ingersoll Lockwood. And you books, get access sorry. To the books, man. You get them online and they got all the because they're children's books. So there's pictures in there, too, except for the last thing, which was a pamphlet.
Do you think instead of him particularly having time travel or I just don't know how to wrap my head around it. That it's like premonitions, and that's why there's little tiny details off, like the battle of the bulge and the dog, you know.
But the fact like, that the book itself,
because that seems like a premonition thing, where he's like,
themselves were about time travel. That was what the real piece that connected okay. to the actual time traveling. It was that the books weren't just about little Baron Trump and his dog. It was about him and his dog time traveling into these worlds within worlds. That's what okay. the piece, the time travel piece comes from. And it gets a little weirder. And this is where I think the occult comes into play, because the occult always comes into play with these elites. And I totally agree with you, Sean, when it comes to Trump, that he's part of the plan, but not in the way that these QAnons thought. It's a part of the plan in that he is a part of the system too, but he's created as a savior. But I think that maybe he did time travel, and I think there's a cult means to it. So if you know anything about Pepe the Frog, so everybody knows about Pepe the Frog, how he's like the big meme. You always see the frog when it comes to QAnons, when it comes to the nons, when it comes to Trump. You see it everywhere. Well, Keck is what they call the frog. Now, Keck is actually an Egyptian god. He's part of the four pairs of deities, and this is during the Egyptian Ogdoad, which I actually talked about the Ogdoad maybe on the first episode of Shadowban Syndicate, because I actually broke down a lot of the different gods from that. And Keck, or Kekui, started out with the head of a serpent, but as it morphed, even in that culture of Egyptians, he had the head of a frog. And in every culture after that, that had a version of Keck, even the Greco-Romans, it was a frog-headed man. You can go down the line. They all had this Keck character. And Keck is always associated as the god of chaos. Keck or Keku, he's the god of chaos. And he's got these magical abilities that seemingly connect to any of this time travel. And check this out, how they evoke Keck, they repeat integers or dubs, basically chant mantras, which I've been screaming about for I don't know how long right now, these mantras that can evoke these entities to do certain things. So my take is this: we could talk about time travel devices all day, which I think could totally exist, but maybe these fallen angels or these entities are tied in with this technology, or even tied into portaling time travel, and this Keck demon, this Keck fallen angel, or whatever you want to call him, this entity is tied directly in with Trump, tied directly in with this time traveling piece when it comes to the QAnons, because it just makes sense that you got certain entities over certain things that are created, and maybe Keck is a part of this organization that's being pushed. And this goes directly to what Sean's talking about. Trump's a part of this negative agenda, but he's being promoted as the savior. And maybe he did. Maybe he got this technology, which we all know is absolutely true. His uncle had the technology from Tesla. He was able to make it work. He went back in time. Who knows who he connected with back in time to shift this narrative? And maybe that was the point of time travel. Maybe it was just to shift the narrative, maybe to make him into the savior. Because look at, even the Simpsons predicted that he was going to be president. This is nothing new. Like, what does Groening have access to at this point? James Cameron, some of these guys that are putting out these movies and these TV shows, maybe they have access to time travel as well. I mean, it just makes sense, man. And the more that I thought about it, because I used to blow it off when they say Trump was a time traveler, because I just can't stand the whole QAnon movement. But the more I dug into it, I'm like, there's some validity to it. It's just not how you think. It's not how you're thinking that it is. He's not your savior.
Yeah, they present him as,
I am the chosen one.
He says it himself, you know what I mean? But man, I could see that J Clone 666 was just,
I'm going to come.
Don't be rude.
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
They have a better soundboard than we do. Did you just connect demons to ancient aliens, to the Nephilim, to ancient Egyptians, to Pepe the Frog, to Donald Trump, to time travel.
Yes.
Was that that line? I need a drink.
Hey, and what's up?
I'm not saying it does it. The problem is I'm on 2 hours of sleep, and that's a lot.
And I'm about to tie it back in to what you and Sean started with, the lightning balls. It all ties back into this right here. Mm. Chicago in 2016, during the first round of primaries, when Trump won the primaries, at his Trump Tower, lightning hit the Trump Tower when he was pushed over in the primaries. So he won the primaries and it got struck with lightning at the same time. There's actually videos of it. And Chicago in 2020, in his final presidential debate, which, according to Sean, he threw that debate on purpose so he would lose. That's why he didn't do all the things he did in 2016. Lightning hits Trump Tower again, which appeared to be three simultaneous bolts of lightning hit at the exact time he finished the presidential debate. So in two key points, when he's moving to his ascension to become president and he's moving to his descension to not become president, Trump Tower gets hit by lightning. Lightning balls, baby. I could do it. I could tie it all together, baby. I could do it.
Okay. I need that as a t-shirt. We got to have lightning balls, dinosaurs, 1890s book, Donald Trump, Pepe the Frog, Egyptians, demons, Nephilim, and then a circle going back to lightning
balls.
Just
have the what's it called? The iceberg meme, you know what I mean? Trump at the top, and then you have
there you go.
Or the Vince McMahon one where he's the Vince McMahon meme where it gets like progressively more like excited. God,
that's one of my favorite memes ever.
Oh gosh,
well, love that meme, man.
This right here reminds me of Justin right now because his brain's all mush. Understanding time travel.
Wait, okay, I know. Here's what we do: we just go to the time machine. Then when I get back to the past, I tell her not to do the experiment. Then she won't even be here. That'll work, right? No, please. She already is here, so that must mean I didn't go back in time, right? Please stand. No, but hold on. It just means I haven't done it yet. Okay, so I go back and I tell her not to do the experiment, then I won't have to do it either because she won't be here, then I won't have to come back.
And that's about right. That's about accurate.
It is hard to wrap your mind around when you really try to focus on it.
I thought I had a little bit of understanding until Joel just did that, and I need a nap. That's... I'm going to go back to talking about wildlife now. Like, yeah. I'm tapping out, kids. Stop it. This is too much. Oh, gosh. Somebody on our meme page, on Cryptids of the Corn podcast meme page, somebody needs to make that meme for us, please. Yeah, we have some very talented meme artists.
I would love to see it, and we'll all share it if you do it. If you can get all those things into one meme.
Joe just dropped the hammer and came in like...
Time is now.
Jumped out of nowhere, man. He just started.
Did you hear Jay,
especially because I like that connection.
He was like, "The time is now."
Because it makes sense with that whole lightning
time travel
thing.
Baby.
Like, I think that is the key to something with time travel. It has to be. Like, I think with everything else, like a lot of stuff you could look up, I think that to me, through the whole episode, the key is something with lightning, not necessarily just the lightning balls, but lightning in general.
As either byproduct or as power, like it's a part of the phenomena. I agree with that. That it's well, I don't know if it's.
Now, I don't know if it can be
it,
harnessed. I'm kind of like skeptical. I will be honest. I am skeptical. I like the evidence of a lot of the time travels I've seen, but I'm skeptical that it could be harnessed and intentionally. I think they want to harness it, but I'm still kind of skeptical that they've been able to actually harness it, like to be able to strategically send people to specific times. You know what I mean? I obviously there is a lot of evidence that there, you know, could be that it could be possible that people have done it, but it's just. I can't see that they harnessed it, especially like with so many random things happening with random time slips. Or maybe they tried it once and they did send people back intentionally and that riffed everything and changed everything, right? And then maybe that's why there is so many random portals opening or random things appearing. So there's a lot of things you could go with it.
I think I'm at that time travel, as in what we just talked about, as in people manipulating. I don't think people can manipulate it. I think it's all manipulation of data, or not, I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Like the manipulation, I don't think people are going back in time or forward in time. I think they're pretending that they are to get stuff over. As far as the maybe in the more and maybe more of the natural portals or whatever, I guess I can believe in that, that dinosaurs are popping up or ancient, or I don't know what I believe anymore. I'm done. This is, I can't do it. This is all Atlas's fault. I only slept like 2 hours last night, and now I'm going to be sitting in the wall just staring, talking about time travel.
Yeah, I feel like it's like that commercial, that old commercial. Is this your brain on drugs? Like I had that nice frying pan. I just took Justin's brain and just cracked it right in there and just started frying it up.
I've seen static coming out of his ears.
That's why my hair's like this.
Well, guys, this was an absolute blast, like it is every time we get together. This was a fun, fun episode. I was actually really super excited going into it. I'm glad Sean came up with this great idea for us to do. It's always just fun getting together with you four guys and, well, two guys and something that's sort of organically based that happens to hang out with us.
Right. It's in a man shape.
It's in a man shape. I had a blast. Go ahead and give everybody your good stuff again.
You can find us everywhere you can find podcasts. Join our Patreon. Please subscribe to the YouTube. We're so close to hitting that 1,000 person mark.
And jump onto our website and check out our website and our shop at
cryptidsofthecorn.com. Forgot the store. You can buy Cryptids of the Corn underwear, lawn chair documentary, lawn chairs, all that good stuff. You can have, there may even be an option to have a picture of Jay's face on the underwear. Ooh. And you can buy his hair. The hair should be on the website officially by the time this goes live.
You can sit in your Cryptids of the Corn chair and your Cryptids of the Corn underwear, just looking up at the sky, seeing what you can see.
And sniffing Jay Clone's hair at the same time.
Jar of Jay's hair.
Yeah, it sounds
right off the flap.
For sure, fresh off the flap.
Yeah, you could check us out at killthemockingbirds.com. You can find us on Instagram at Kill the Mockingbirds Podcast, at Van Tesla Music, at Sean Chris Music. You can find me and Sean Eni streaming platform Musically at Joel Thomas or Sean Chris. Love you guys. Can't wait to see you next month. Bye.
Bye.